Yeah, I always say that when it comes to Yontif, the more we put into preparing for Yontif, the more we get out of it. And the problem is sometimes we're so busy getting ready for Yontif, we don't get ready for Yontif. I mean, we don't spiritually get ready because we're so busy cooking and cleaning and building sukkahs or making whatever we're doing for Yontif. We're so busy with that, we don't get ourselves ready. So I just want to praise everyone here to come out the week before Yontif, to Ashir, to get themselves ready, which is also a very special thing. The topic tonight, as you see, it's called Get Real. And I want to try to give us a sort of perspective on Rosh Hashanah, which I think is one of the central ideas of Rosh Hashanah, which we don't always see in general. But we'll go through a bunch of sources and some ideas to build up to it, and we'll see this is actually a very central approach to the day, and will it help us connect with the day overall. And we'll begin with the Rambam. It's source one. For those who can follow along, that's great. If not, I'll translate. Source one is the Rambam, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, where he quotes basically the entire corpus of halacha. So Rambam has a short piece about shofar in Hilchos Tshuva. And the Rambam, it's a very famous quote, you may have heard it before. The Rambam tries to give us a meaning behind shofar. And let's read this together inside. The Rambam says, "Afal pi shetkiya shofar b'Rosh Hashanah exerts a kasuv." Even though essentially blowing shofar is a command of the Torah, we can't give reasons to Hashem's mitzvos, it is what it is. Remez Yishbo, the Rambam says there is a special hint to the meaning of shofar. What's the hint? Kolomar, Uru Yoshenim Mishinaschem. Wake up those who are sleeping from your sleep. And those who are slumbering, get up from your slumber. You should search your deeds. You should do tshuva. And you should remember your Creator. Those who forget the truth in the emptiness of time. And they spend all their days pursuing and being involved in nothingness and emptiness and vanity. Asher Yoel, it doesn't help them. Yatzil, it doesn't save them. Habitu nashoseichem, look into your souls. Mitivu darcheichem, you should improve your ways, malveichem, and your plans. V'yazov ko'echa mikem darko, everyone should leave their evil ways, machshivaso, asher lotova, and all their bad thoughts, etc. That's the Rambam explains shofar. So it's a simple idea. It's like, literally like an alarm clock. We're in a daze, we're in a stupor all year long, we don't focus on our neshama, we don't focus on growing. And the shofar goes and blows the loud blast, supposed to kind of shake us up and scare us into growing as Jews. That's a simple understanding of the Rambam. I want to try to understand a deeper idea of what does it mean that we're asleep. I mean, the Rambam uses terminology that we're sleeping and we're slumbering all year long. And there's much that's been said about this, and there's a lot of ideas that are deeper ideas which come along with this. And I'm going to try to understand a little bit of what it means that we're asleep. Because the shofar's call is to wake us up, and to jolt us, and to get us out of our stupor that we're in. That's the idea of the shofar. So I guess our goal today is to understand what's the sleep that we're in. Why does the Rambam say that we're involved in Havli Hazman, emptiness? Lord Hevel, emptiness, nothingness. And what is it about Rosh Hashanah that's going to pull us out of our sleep and bring us into the world of reality? That's our question for tonight. So I want to start with some other sources, and then we're going to kind of build up Rosh Hashanah now. That's our goal. So let me start with an analogy. Picture a young kid graduates from college. And he starts a business. And he works very hard and succeeds at the business. He builds up a customer base. He expands. He's making a lot of money. He makes franchises. And everything, he has lots of money in the bank. And then he steps back and realizes that he's just playing a video game. Turns it all off and nothing's there. Right? And we know people. There's kids. There's people out there that spend hours and hours and hours, days, weeks, months, building up empires on video games. And at the end, you push off and there's nothing to it. There's nothing there. Right? It was all pretend. It wasn't real. It wasn't a real world. It made the person feel very good. The person feels powerful, feels successful, but it's all pretend. That's all make-believe. So we know that's an extreme. We don't live our lives in video games, but we understand there are people out there that really get so much from involving themselves in a pretend world, and then they turn it off. There's nothing there anymore. But let's look at real life for a second. In real life, I think there are ways we also kind of avoid reality. For instance, let's say somebody, we know often that we're eating in an unhealthy way. We have unhealthy eating habits. And we know it's going to not be good for our health. We know that. But we might go on for years and years and years in the same habits, kind of ignoring what the results are going to be. Ignoring it. We know this is going to cause heart problems. This is going to cause diabetes. All these things we know it's going to cause, but we ignore it. Now, chas v'shalom, time goes on, and the doctor says, you know what, you got a big problem, so then it wakes us up. It jolts us. We say, we were living in a dream world all that time. We kind of knew there was a problem with our eating habits, But when it came down to it, we ignored it. We kind of shoved it under the rug. Until, chas v'shalom, you hear there's a problem, it doesn't shake you up. People can smoke for decades, and they know it's bad for them. But until the doctor says there's a problem, the person doesn't even, is not able to find the strength or the motivation to stop smoking. So in a certain sense, that person's living in a dream world. You know, there's things that we feel are, it's reality, but we're ignoring it. And we have to face, sometimes we have to face reality. You know, one more example. Let's say somebody in real life builds a company. Somebody graduates from cool school and builds up a great business. But the problem is that person's building the business on lies. The person deceives others, the person cheats, the person lies. So they might build up a huge company, but it's all a mirage. It's going to come collapsing down. Certain Ponzi schemes and the like. You know, at a certain point, everything just kind of collapses on itself and there's nothing there. You work for a lifetime on something, and at the end, there's no accomplishment, there's no lasting pleasure, there's no lasting success. Everything was just pretend. Everything was just, a deck of cards ready to collapse. And, these are extremes. But let's take this person, so he's trying to avoid the law. He's trying to avoid the cops. And he's able to, be very crafty in ways that he's able to deceive others and no one recognizes that he's building his company on lies and on stealing and on cheating. But ultimately, if the police don't catch him, so we as Jews know that Hashem will catch him. And he's going to go up to Shemayim, and he's going to have a lifetime of accomplishment. Look, I built this huge business, and I helped so many people, and I gave a lot of tzedakah, and Hashem will say, well, every penny you gave was stolen. It wasn't your money. You get no credit for it. It was a dream world. You thought you were doing so much, but since you're building up your business and making your money on lies and deception, there's nothing there. And the idea is that things that we thought were success were not successful. There was not, it was a pretend success of something which seemed real, seemed actual, but there was nothing there. So I think we get these are different analogies. We get the idea that there's things in life that we kind of ignore the reality of. And we look back and we say, I thought I was enjoying my food, but really it was killing me. I thought that business was great, really it was nothing. I thought, we have these ideas of success that aren't really successful. There's a pasuk, it says in Parshas Shlach, it says that when after the sin of the Meragim, of the spies, so there was a group of Jews who wanted to cross into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe said, you can't do it, Hashem already decreed not to. And the Torah says, the Hilo Sitzlach, it won't succeed. And Mefarshim explained, because anytime you go against Hashem's will, it's not successful. You might look successful, they didn't make it in, they were killed. But even if they made it in, it wasn't successful, because ultimately they wanted to achieve what it means to be in Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha, the holiness, the spiritual levels of Eretz Yisrael. If they went in against Hashem's will, they're not going to get anything out of it. And they're going to say, I was in Eretz Yisrael, I did such a great mitzvah, Hashem will say there's nothing there. You went against what I said, you're living a dream life. There's nothing there. So the question is, what is reality? We're talking about we live a dream life, what exactly is the reality we're talking about here? We know Torah is emes. We know the Torah is true. We know Hashem's word is true accomplishment. When we do a mitzvah, that's something, we do it right, that's something which is with us for eternity. That's true success. In one of the kinos on Tisha B'Av, it refers to Hashem as mamasho, our the substance of the world. Because that's something of substance. And we do things which Hashem says are the right things to do. They're substantial, they're real. And we've done something real, and it's an accomplishment, and it's meaningful, it's lasting. Things that we do that are not part of Hashem's plan, these things we might feel at the time that they're good, but ultimately we didn't accomplish anything, and it's not a success, it's going to disappear. So we, in the davening on Rosh Hashanah, we talk about kol risha ka'ashan tichle, that all of the wickedness should disappear like smoke. Because at times we're doing things that are not right, we think they're real, but it's really like a smoke screen. You touch it, there's nothing there. So we describe it as disappearing like smoke because it was a mirage. What we do in life, which is not within Hashem's will, so that's a mirage. It looked like an accomplishment, but ultimately there was nothing there that we accomplished. The Torah says you have to remember when you do make money and you do it right, you still have to remember that Hashem is the one who gives success. You remember that Hashem is the one who gave you the ability to accomplish. It comes from Hashem. That's where it comes from. We have to recognize when we make money, it's not from the job, it's from Hashem, who granted us that privilege that we have a job that gives us money. We say, when we daven, we'll talk more about davening in a minute, we say, Chonin Hadas, Hashem is the one who gives us wisdom. So we think, I'm so smart, I know so much, and it's because Hashem grants us that wisdom. So it's not, we are smart, but we have to recognize where it comes from. When someone is sick, God forbid, you go to the doctor and he heals. We have to recognize that healing is from Hashem. It's not the doctor helps, but ultimately Hashem is Rofei Choleim Lo Yisrael. Hashem is the one who heals, and that's reality. But if we think the healing was only the doctor, or the money was only because of my skills in my business, or my wisdom is because I studied so hard, then we're missing the reality of it, because we're missing the fact that Hashem is the one who gave us that opportunity, gave us those abilities. When someone does an Avera, when we do something against Hashem, so we don't feel at the moment that it's poison for us, that it's bad for us, that it's toxic. We don't feel it. It's like when we eat unhealthy food, we don't feel on the spot how bad it is for our bodies. But the reality of it is that it's terrible for us. And as we eat an unhealthy lifestyle, it takes a toll on our bodies. And as we live a lifestyle where we don't follow Hashem's will, it also takes a toll on us, on our bodies and our souls. We don't feel it all the time, but that's the reality of it. So this is what we want to talk about, what's a real accomplishment or what's a dream world. We have to see if it fits within the realm of Hashem's world, Hashem's will, Hashem's hashkacha upon us. So these things are real. And I have it with me. If I work honestly, and I make money and I support a family, that's a real accomplishment. If I give tzedakah, that's a real accomplishment. And that's with me forever. That stays for eternity. If I'm dishonest and I make money, as much tzedakah as I give, Hashem will say that wasn't you. You know, you took someone else's money, that wasn't your accomplishment. It was false. But this I think is our vision of what we're trying to understand is reality. It's hard to live with this sometimes. It's a hard vision. You know, as Jews we know that's the truth. But to live with that all the time is a very, very hard thing. So I want to show, if we look now at source number two on the sheet. This is a quote from the Gemara in Maseches Brachos. And it shows how even the greatest of our sages recognize the difficulty of living with this reality in daily life. To understand that Hashem is always there with us, Hashem is always watching us, accomplishments come from Hashem. We feel very independent and we feel that that it's our own accomplishment. So I just want to read a short story, but it kind of brings out the idea. The story talks about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of the greatest of the sages. And he became sick. And his students came to visit him. He was on his deathbed. His students came to see him. Amr lo Rabbeinu. So they said to him, Rabbi, Barchenu, give us a bracha. Amr lehem, hi ratzon, shetemorash ma'lechem kamar basar v'dam. So he said to them, may be Hashem's will, that your fear of heaven should be upon you like the fear of the human being. So they're waiting for this like incredible bracha. You know, you're gonna, you know, fear Hashem like no else, and you're gonna reach these huge heights of spirituality, and you're gonna be the greatest scholars out there, greatest chachamim. He just said you should fear Hashem like people. So they said, that's it. I'm gonna tell me of Adkan. That's all you're telling us. That's your big bracha on your deathbed to all your students. So he said, I'm gonna levai. If only it be that way. Tedu, you should know. Kesh adam over avera omer shel irani adam. When we do something wrong, we look around and say, no one's watching me. That's what we do, right? We don't think about Hashem watching us. So he said, if only you feared Hashem like people, then your life would be different. And the explanation is very simple. It's because people we see as a reality. You know, I feel, oh, you watch me right now. Hashem is a concept to us. You know, we know Hashem's watching us right now. We don't feel it in the same way. And we don't feel Hashem's eyes upon us. We don't feel Hashem watching us every single moment. There's a story with Rav Yitzchak of Berdichev. He was in a wagon. And the wagon driver was driving him place to place. And the driver didn't realize that he had the Rebbe with him. So he said, hold on a minute. And he stopped at an orchard. He's going to steal some fruit. And he told Rav Levi Yitzchak, and he didn't know it was the Rebbe, he said, if anybody comes by, screams, I come back to the wagon, no one will see me. So the guy goes out to the orchard, starts picking the fruits. And the Rebbe says, somebody's watching, come back. And he runs back, and he says, who's watching, he's watching. And he says, Hashem's watching. You know, that's what he tells him. But we don't feel it that way. We don't feel that's a reality. We feel that Hashem is conceptual and... I mean, we know Hashem's watching, we don't really feel it, and we feel that people are reality. And this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Again, he's speaking to great, great sages, Tamil Chachamim. He himself was one of the tops in the Gemara. And even they had that same issue, because we as human beings, we have difficulty feeling that Hashem is reality, that Hashem is watching us. We hide from it. We hide from Hashem because we don't feel Hashem is reality. And it's the truth of the world. The word in Hebrew for world is olam. It comes to the word helam. The word helam means hidden. That's what the word helam means. Because this world hides Hashem. The Hashem made the world that it hides him, because that's our challenge in life. We have to be here to bring out Hashem, make Hashem reality for ourselves. But the world, as is, hides Hashem. So we don't always see Hashem apparently in daily life, because that's the world, the nature of the world. You can see everything as natural, and I'm independent, and I accomplish on my own. I don't need Hashem for anything. That's how we feel sometimes. So then the world is hiding Hashem. This is our one of our biggest challenges as Jews in life. The pasuk says Hashem is kel mistater. He's a hidden God. He hides away. And our job always is that we're supposed to reveal. We megala Hashem. We're to reveal Hashem to the world and reveal Hashem in our own lives. That's our job. So this is our this is how we usually live our life. We usually live our life that we struggle with this. You know, Hashem we know is a reality. We know He's watching us. We know when we do things that are wrong, that they're not really accomplishing much, and they're just kind of a temporary fix, but they're not going to be with us for eternity. We know that. And we struggle with Hashem hiding behind the scenes, not feeling Hashem is real with us every single day. But I think there are times built into the calendar, built into the year, or into our days, that we have to, you know, as they say, face the music. We have to face reality. We have to see Hashem, and we have to know Hashem is there. It's like we have to look Hashem in the eye and admit to the truth. There are times built in that we do this. So I want to focus on a few times that we have in the Torah that we have to kind of confront Hashem, interact with Hashem in a way that we can't avoid Him, and then we'll see how it applies to Rosh Hashanah. So the first instance, I think, is the Beis HaMikdash, which we're not fortunate enough to have right now, is a place where Hashem is there. The Shekhinah is there, Hashem's presence is there. When you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you're confronting Hashem. The Torah refers to the Beis HaMikdash as being Lifnei Hashem, you're before Hashem. It says that you're supposed to take the lulav for 7 days Lifnei Hashem. According to the Torah law, you take the lulav 7 days in the Beis HaMikdash, only one day outside. Because you take it for 7 days Lifnei Hashem, you're before Hashem. So Beis HaMikdash is you're encountering Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. You're going there and you can't avoid it. You're seeing a place full of miracles, full of Kedusha, full of Vodas Hashem. You see a place which is, you can't avoid the reality when you're in the Beis HaMikdash. When we just have to make Aliyah L'Regel, we have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year on the 3 Regalim. So the way that the Gemara describes that is you're going Liros V'Liros. You're going to see and to be seen. So to be seen is easy, that we're supposed to appear there. So we have to be seen in the Beis HaMikdash. But it says you're going to see. What are you going to see? You're going to Liros Hashem. You're going to see Hashem there. So we don't know how to see Hashem. We don't really know what that means exactly, but the Chazal are telling us that when you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you're actually going to go to somehow greet Hashem there. So this is one thing that's built in, again, we can't do this anymore, but it's built into Jewish life. And we had times, 3 times a year we had to go, other times we went as well, and we had to confront reality. And when you're standing in the Beis HaMikdash, you couldn't avoid it. You couldn't, everything which you did in life, which you were kind of hiding away from Hashem, we were doing things that were inappropriate. When you walk into this mikdash, everything kind of like falls down. You realize, you know, I've been living a life of falsehoods. Or I realize that I'm building myself up on things which are inappropriate. And when you're there, you can't avoid confronting Hashem, confronting that reality, and confessing to it, and changing your direction, because that's what this mikdash did for a person. You have to confront Hashem's reality. And at that point, you assess, you know, how you live. You assess, you know, what's my real mission in life? What's real pleasure? What's real accomplishment? What's hashkacha in the world? And when you're standing in this mikdash, you couldn't avoid these questions. They were there, they were clear, and the answers were clear. So that's one place which we can't actually do right now. That's one place where we actually did confront Hashem and had to face reality. But there is one that we do daily. Tefillah. When we daven, that itself is also confronting the reality of Hashem. And I want to read to you, if you look at source number 3, this is from Chushi Grach. This is Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. This is kind of the bread and butter of yeshiva learning. You know, Rav Chaim and Rav Chaim Brisker. This is something which is learned in yeshiva all the time. This is Hilchos Tefillah. He says something which he says the foundation of davening. And he actually says this is not the halacha. He says that if you don't fulfill this when you daven, you're not yotze. You have not davened. That's what he says. If he was the halacha, we'd all be in big trouble because what he's saying is quite challenging. I'm not going to read the whole paragraph, but if we just, let's skip down to Venira Lomar, those who are following, towards, right before it becomes italic. He's trying to describe, basically, in short, the Rambam talks about Kavana in davening in 2 different places. One place the Rambam talks about Kavana in davening, he says, you're supposed to have Kavana, but if you don't, your tefillah is still valid. Another place he says, without Kavana, your tefillah is not valid. You haven't davened. You're not Yotze. So Rav Chaim wants to resolve that. How can one? What kind of kavana is it that makes your tefillah invalid? What kind of lack of kavana makes it that your tefillah is valid is not so ideal. So he says there's really 2 levels of kavana when one davens. So we're used to the kavana that we understand what we're saying and we're connected to Hashem as we daven. We're used to that one. So that one obviously is ideal. But if we don't understand what we're saying and we don't think about it, we're still yotze. But he says there's another kind of kavana which if you don't have it, you did not daven. And let's read what that is. It's very powerful what he says. He says, "V'nir lomar detrei gavnei kavana." There's two kinds of kavana. One type is shechavim v'yira atzmo kilu omei lifnei shchina. You have to see yourself standing before Hashem. I mean, forget the words. The words are secondary. He's saying the first type of kavana, which he feels is essential, is a deal breaker. If you don't have that, you haven't davened. He says, is that you need to stand there thinking, "I am now before Hashem." Then he says, "V'nira de kavana zu einam midin kavana." This is not your typical kavana, like we speak about that you have kavana when you daven today. Rakshu me'etzem ma'isat fil. This is the essence of davening. This is what it means to daven. Davening is not the words. The words are what you do once you're before Hashem. But davening is, I am now going to step before Hashem right now. He says, if your heart's not focused, and you don't see yourself standing before Hashem, the mispala and davening, you haven't done tefillah. You haven't davened. That's not called davening. That's how he describes it. Now again, most say that this is not the halacha, so we're also be in big trouble, like I said before. But the idea is a powerful idea. Davening, in its essence, is I am now stepping in front of Hashem. What I do when I'm there, okay, once I'm there, I'll speak to Hashem, and I'll make my requests, and I'll daven. But step one, and the main part of davening, is that I'm standing in front of my Creator. That's the main part of davening. So I would suggest, it's the same idea we said before, that tefillah is a time in the day that we're supposed to confront reality. We're supposed to confront Hashem as the reality of life, reality of the world, and we stand to daven. The first kavana and the main kavana is that I'm now about to connect with my Creator. That's it. What we say is, again, that's secondary, but what we're doing is I'm connecting with the Creator, I'm looking the Creator in the face, as it were, and I'm supposed to realign who I am and focus on my mission in life because I'm standing in front of Hashem. When you stand in front of Hashem, you're focused. You know, you have your head on straight. We ignore these things that are not realistic, and as we said before, our dreams, we focus on reality. So if we really daven properly, according to what Rav Chaim says here, we'd step in front of davening and we'd be lifnei Hashem. And we'd feel the whole world would kind of dissolve and we'd just be me and Hashem, and I'd get my head on straight at that point. So we have a mitzvah daily to step lifnei Hashem. So the same idea that we said in the Beis HaMikdash is called lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. Davening is also lifnei Hashem. It's the same exact word he uses, lifnei Hashem. And I'll even bring out one more point. Look at source number four. This is the Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the famous Rishonim. It's also quoted by Mishnah Berurah. Again, I'm skipping some of it. It's actually if you have time to read it, you're on your own. It's a very powerful piece about how to start yourself davening. But if you skip down to the third line, he says that, he speaks about these incredible kavanas to have when you're at the daven. You should kind of strip your body off your soul. Like some of these very spiritual things. And then he says, after all that, what do? Yachshav gam ken k'ilu hu omei v'smikdash. You should think you're standing in the midst of mikdash. So that's like the final thing you do. So after you do all these fancy spiritual things, like he says, at that point, you envision yourself in the midst of mikdash. Because I think it's the same point, because davening is, you're stepping in front of Hashem. You're stepping before the Shekhinah. You're with Hashem right now. So that's the idea of davening. So we have built into our day times where we have to face reality. That we can't avoid it, we can't hide from Hashem. We can't, you know, continue on in our life doing things that are wrong, inappropriate. I'm tricking ourselves in terms of what's accomplishment and what's considered pleasure and what's not. Because we have to face Hashem daily. And how can we stand before Hashem and not think about what our mission is in life and what reality is? So that's davening. So we have going to the Sinikdash and we have davening. And both of these, I believe, are the same point. Furthermore, so when we talk about davening, when we actually say the words of davening, what are we doing? We're recognizing everything's from Hashem. You know, healings from Hashem, and parnassus from Hashem, and pieces from Hashem, and we're recognizing that point, that everything that I think that the reality of my parnassus is because I'm so skilled, and I say, no, it's really from Hashem. The reality of refuah is because I have great doctors. I say, no, really, it's because Hashem is the one who's rofei chol yamei Yisrael. And the same points I said before, in davening, you're expressing those every single day. When you express something, when you speak it in words, that means that it's reality. That means it's real to you. It's not just a thought, that's the concept. We're saying it as reality. So davening is you're stepping in front of Hashem. That's the primary thing. And then you're speaking to Hashem and recognizing that everything I have or do, He's the one who's allowing me to do it. He's given me that power. He's given me that ability. He's given me that gift. So that's davening. So we have Beis HaMikdash and we have davening. Now those two things require us to go and do it. If you want to go to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to get up and go there. Davening requires us to step in front of Hashem. The idea of taking three steps back is for us because we're leaving our world and entering in front of Hashem. That's that idea. I have to go there. Now, Rosh Hashanah is a different time to confront reality. And this is where I want to get to today. Rosh Hashanah is a time where we have to confront reality, but it's the opposite. It's not that we step in front of Hashem. Rosh Hashanah, Hashem comes to us. And there's many sources you find from Chazal. Rosh Hashanah is a time that Hashem actually comes to approach us. Davening, we're walking to approach Hashem. Beis Hamikdash, we're traveling to see Hashem. So let's just look at one or two sources here. Let's look at source number 6 right now. Source number 6 is Midrash Rabbah. It's quoting a pasuk that we say on Friday night in Kabbalah Shabbos. We say, L'fnei Hashem, L'fnei Hashem kiva, v'shbot ha'aretz, yishbot hevel v'tzek, am b'misharim. So the Midrash says, what does it mean, what are we referring to there, L'fnei Hashem? He says, L'fnei Hashem, lama. Why is it L'fnei Hashem? Again, we're jumping in the middle of the context there. But he says, kiva b'Rosh Hashanah, v'mikipurim. For Hashem is coming. When is Hashem coming? On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Hashem's coming, it says. So we say, L'fnei Hashem, kiva l'shbot ha'aretz. We're before Hashem, for He's coming to judge the land. When's He coming? When does He come to us? He comes to us on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Hashem comes. So that's the description of Hashem coming. We know there's another famous pasuk. I don't know if I put it in here or not. I don't think I put it here. Dershu Hashem b'matzo k'rubo sukaruv. You should seek Hashem when He is found, call Him when He is close. And Chazal tell us, when is that? When is Hashem found? When is He close? It's Aser Smechuva. He's found and He's close. I mean, He's here. He came. Hashem comes. So there's a way of confronting Hashem that we have to step in front of Hashem. And that's challenging for us because, you know, Kavan and Davening is very hard. On the basis of Mikdash, we're not able to go to, unfortunately, right now. So we don't have those opportunities. Davening we have, but it's a challenge for us. Rosh Hashanah is a time where Hashem is coming to us. And Hashem is saying to us, I'm here to confront you. Look me in the face and make sure that you're living life appropriately. That is, that's Rosh Hashanah. And I want to bring this out from a very interesting source. Now, the very first Rosh Hashanah was the day the Adam was created. The sixth day of creation. Rosh Hashanah. And the world was created on Chafei Elul. Rosh Hashanah Al Tishrei was the day Adam was created. So the idea of any Yantif, and this is a theme which, you know, I think about a lot, it's not just that we're commemorating a past event, we're reliving the events. On Pesach, we're not just commemorating Sisraim, we have to relive the experience of Chirus. On Shavuos, we're not just reliving Matan Torah, we're not just commemorating Matan Torah, we're reliving Matan Torah. Hashem is there to present this Torah again on Shavuos. So Rosh Hashanah, what's the event of Rosh Hashanah? What are we reliving exactly? So we're reliving the day that Adam was created in Gan Eden. So we're reliving on that day. There's a lot of references to this. No one, which is not our topic right now, but it's a very interesting thing, is that I guess one of the highlights of that day was when Hashem breathed into Adam Nishmas Chaim. Viva Abba Nishmas Chaim. Hashem breathed into Adam His Neshama. So many Sfarim say that Tekiah Shofar is supposed to be a replay of that, because we blow into the shofar and we're kind of replaying what happened when Hashem blew the neshama into Adam. So that's a very cool thing. It'll be a different discussion. But today we're trying to relive what happened on the first day of creation. So unfortunately, we know the first day of creation of Adam was not as exciting as it should have been, because that was the day where he did the chait. That's the day he was given one mitzvah, not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and he ate from it. That was his first day. So the Torah records, look at source 7 here. The Torah says, well, before we get to that, the background would be that at this point, so Adam ate from the tree, Chava took it, gave to Adam, they both ate from the tree, and then it says they recognized that they were naked, and they hid. So the pasuk says, Vishmuas kol Hashem Elokim mishalach began ruch hayom. It says that Hashem, that they heard, Adam and Chava heard the sound of Hashem walking through the garden towards the direction of the day. Vayischada Adam v'ishto. They hid. Adam and his wife hid. B'nei Hashem Elokim b'soch Eitz Hagan. They hid from before Hashem amongst the trees of the garden. V'ikra Hashem Elokim ala Adam v'imru ayaka. So Hashem Elokim called Adam and he said, Ayaka, where are you? So that's the description of the Torah. So they're hiding. Now the question always is, like, what are they doing? Why are they hiding? And then when Hashem says, Ayaka, where are you? What's he asking? Hashem knows where they are. So Rashi tells us, what's Hashem asking? He's trying to get them to do tshuva. He says to them, where are you? He's hoping they'd say, oh, here we are, Hashem, we're sorry, we did an Aveira, please forgive us. That's what he was hoping. They didn't do that. No, instead, Adam starts blaming his wife, and she blames the snake, and there's a whole mess, and they got thrown out of Gan Eden because of it. That's what happened. But the Targum Yonasan gives a very interesting explanation of what they were doing and what Hashem was asking them. If you look at the next part of that source, the Targum Yonasan, one of the Aramaic translations of the Torah, he says, let's skip down to the second line, Ukra Hashem Elokim la'Adam. Hashem called to Adam, Amar Lein said to him, Halokol, this is the Aramaic here, Halokol alma devresi goli kadamai. Hashem says to Adam, isn't the entire world I created revealed before me? The dark parts are like the light parts. I see everything, Hashem says. How do you think you could hide from me? That's what he tells him. The land which you're hiding in, I could see you there. And where is the mitzvah that I commanded you? What happened to the mitzvah I gave you? So I always found this to be a very powerful line, because what's Adam doing? He's trying to hide from Hashem. And at first you think, what do you mean? You're crazy? You're hiding from Hashem? But like we said, we do this all the time. You know, we look around and we say, no one's watching me, and then we do what we want to do. Right? Or if we realize Hashem's watching us, then we'd be perfect human beings. We wouldn't do anything wrong, because we'd be too scared. But because we don't see Hashem watching us, you know, we think that Hashem can't see, we sort of hide from Hashem, we go into our world, which is not reality, which is kind of our fantasy world, and do the things which are not actually accomplishing much, and we think Hashem's not watching. But Hashem says to Adam, don't you know I can see everything? Don't you know wherever you are, I'm going to see you? You can't hide from me. What happened to the mitzvah that I gave you? That's what Hashem tells Adam. And he says the words Ayeka. So I think this is the replay which we have to go through in Rosh Hashanah. This is it. And this is what we're going for. Rosh Hashanah is the day where we have to recognize that we live our lives at times hiding from Hashem. You know, we do things in life which are not what Hashem wants out of us. And we have this fantasy that Hashem doesn't see us or doesn't know about it. It's not going to come back to haunt us later. I'm not going to see it as a problem. And really, it is a problem. Really, we're hiding from our Creator. And that is a problem. That's always a problem. That's not considered an accomplishment. So Rosh Hashanah comes, and there we are. We are Adam and Chava, and we're hiding, in the trees of the garden. And we think Hashem doesn't see us. Then Hashem comes down, and he says, Ayeka. He says, where are you? And he said, like Targum Yonasan explains, I can see you. I know where you are. I know exactly what you did. That's what Hashem tells us. Respond to me. That's what he's asking us. And I think one of our major, Hashem is calling to each and every one of us, Rosh Hashanah, saying, he's saying, Ayeka. He's saying, where are you? I'm waiting for you. And our job at that point, had Adam responded at this point, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I sinned, he could have remained in Gan Eden. There's no indication he would have been thrown out if he did tshuva on the spot. They were thrown out because he started giving excuses and hemming and hawing and blaming others. So at that point, Hashem says, you're out of here, forget about it. But if not for that, had he immediately responded and said, Hashem, it was silly to hide from you, I know I did wrong, life's challenging sometimes and we're not perfect. He confessed, so Hashem would have said, fine, I forgive you, you're welcome to stay here in Gan Eden. But because Adam didn't respond to that call, and he was hiding from Hashem, and he gave excuses afterwards, at that point Hashem said, you can't stay, I'm sorry. And then that's where Hashem threw him out of Gan Eden. But on Rosh Hashanah, I think one of our major jobs on Rosh Hashanah is that we have to respond to that call of Ayeka. Hashem is calling to us, Ayeka, where are you? You're hiding from me, come out, come back from wherever you are. Where are you? That's what Hashem says. And if we can come out and say, here we are, there are times in life that we did things which are wrong, we're not perfect, we did hide at times, but we can admit to that, because now we're confronting you face to face. So Hashem says, okay, fine, I forgive you, we'll have a great year together. But we have to have our answer to Ayeka. That's our goal is, how do we answer that question? Can we answer that Ayeka, that question, or not? And then I think that one of the major things we could do over the next few days, for Rosh Hashanah, in our own minds, to think, how do we answer that call? Now, what's our answer when Hashem calls out to us and says, where are you? What do we say? The answer, we hope, should be that, Hashem, we've done things which are wrong. We're not perfect, but we really want to be better. We want to do tshuva, and we want to stay here with you. And if that's our answer, then we're in good shape. I think that's the clear answer to the question. So Rosh Hashanah is Hashem coming to confront us, as opposed to davening or going up for the regular, where we confront Hashem. And we can't avoid it. Rosh Hashanah is the time we cannot avoid Hashem. The fact that it's Yom HaDin means we are being judged in Rosh Hashanah. It means Hashem is coming to judge us regardless of whether we like it or not. Hashem is coming. That's very, very clear. So if you look at source number 5, source number 5 tells us, this is the source for the judgment of Rosh Hashanah. We know Hashem judges us Rosh Hashanah. We know it's the day of Yom HaDin. And what's the source for it? Doesn't say it in the Chumash anywhere. It's a Mishnah. And the way the Mishnah describes it, it's a very strange way to describe it. The Mishnah says, source 5, Rosh Hashanah kol baya olam ovrim lefanav kivnei marum. On Rosh Hashanah, all those who have come to the world pass before Hashem like b'nei marum. The word b'nei marum is not so easy to understand. And the Gemara asks the question, what does it mean, kivnei marum? What does that mean? So the three examples given, one is kivnei amarna. One says it's like sheep, meaning that when they used to give meiser on sheep, they would pass through a little, they'd make a narrow door in the stable, and the sheep would go out one by one. So that means the sheep walking one by one at the door. Some say it's kemailos b'schor maron. It's a very narrow mountain pass. We have to walk in single file to get up, or else you wouldn't have room and you'd fall off. And the third example is kechailos shel beis David. It was like the soldiers of David's army going out single file to war. But the idea is single file. That's the idea. Kivnei marum means we pass for Hashem single file, which means that every single individual human being in this world has their moment that they confront Hashem one-on-one on Rosh Hashanah. That's what it means. And Rosh Hashanah is the day we're going to confront Hashem, and we have to be able to answer to Hashem. You know, who are we? Where are we going? You know, what's our mission in life? Are we fulfilling our mission in life? Are we living in a dream world or living in reality? That's the question we have to answer. And we can't defy reality. We have to face the music. We have to look at Hashem and say, this is who we are, this is what we're doing. We have to answer the question, Rosh Hashanah. It's the Yom HaDin. Hashem looks at us individually, and we have to answer the question. I'll tell you, I saw, you know, after all this, we can appreciate this, the Gematria. The Gematria is at times, you know, you can't take a source from a Gematria. But when you have an idea which you feel is a real, true idea, and the Gematria fits, oftentimes it really helps to make the idea, you know, really support the idea. So I saw in a sefer that I learned off in Munas Yitecha, he points out that Rosh Hashanah is exactly the Gematria of Beis HaMikdash. It's the exact Gematria, 861. Because essentially, Rosh Hashanah is the whole world becomes like the Beis HaMikdash. We're all standing before Hashem. You look at the Beis HaMikdash, you walk in front of Hashem. Rosh Hashanah Hashem comes to the entire world. And the whole world becomes Beis HaMikdash. You can work out the math, it's exactly 861, both of them. Beis HaMikdash, Rosh Hashanah. So this sefer, in addition to that, he says that on Rosh Hashanah, being that the whole world is like the Beis HaMikdash, and the whole world is full of Hashem, so then that's why every single other holiday there's an idea of Aliyah L'Regel, going up to the Beis HaMikdash for the Yantif. There's no concept of Rosh Hashanah. Why is that? Because Rosh Hashanah Hashem comes to us. We don't have to go there because the whole Beis HaMikdash comes to us in Rosh Hashanah. And he even says that on Rosh Hashanah, we have a minhag that the chazan will start davening in his seat before he goes up to the Amud. I guess, I don't know if you can see it from the women's section or not, depending on your shul, but the chazan will say HaMelech in his seat. Only that he walks up to the Amud. So one deeper concept behind that is because Rosh Hashanah, you don't have to go anywhere to find Hashem. No matter where you are, Hashem is there with you. So you can say the word HaMelech anywhere, and the Melech is right there with you, Rosh Hashanah, because Hashem is there to confront you, Rosh Hashanah. He comes to each and every one of us, Rosh Hashanah, and makes us answer up for our actions. This also is the concept, you know, moving to Yom Kippur for a second. On Yom Kippur, one of the main mitzvah we do in Yom Kippur is the vidui. And we spend a lot of time doing vidui Yom Kippur. You know, the siddur of vidui is very long, and we're sitting there all day long like this. That's Yom Kippur. The Sefer HaChinuch, look at source 8. He describes to us, vidui is a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's a Torah mitzvah to do vidui. And he describes to us, what is it about vidui that's so important? It happens to be the Rambam teaches that vidui is the essence of tshuva. Your tshuva has a lot of steps to it. You have to stop doing the chait, you have to regret what you've done, you have to do vidui, you have to commit to the future. But the Rambam says that the main part of it is the vidui. So what is it about the vidui that's so important? So Sefer HaChinuch writes, look at the first line here in source number 8. He says, "V'fi shebehodas ha'avon bepeh tisgalo machsheves hachute." He says that when you have to admit to the sin verbally, so that exposes our thoughts. And bedaito shumaymin beemes, that shows that we're thinking that we believe 100%. Ki goli v'dul lifnei akel baruchu, that it's revealed and known before Hashem. Kol maase, all of our actions. V'liyasa ayin roa kein roa, and we're not going to make the eye that sees as if it doesn't see. I mean, the concept we said before, you know, we act as if Hashem never saw us. We act as if Hashem's not watching. We ignore that reality. Vidui is the process of recognizing Hashem as a reality that Hashem saw everything we did. If you notice, the words of Vidui are constantly Alchei Shechatanu Lefanecha, before you. And there's a constant refrain that we were Hashem, when we did our sin, we were before you. We forgot about that. When we did the sin, we forgot we were before Hashem, or else we wouldn't have done it. But the vidui is expressing verbally that no, everything that we did was before Hashem. That's what it is. And every single, Hashem's always watching every action that we do. So the he says more about vidui, but the main idea of vidui, when we speak to somebody, we don't speak to walls. When we speak to somebody, it's a reality. So we have to stand before Hashem, we have to verbally admit to the fact that we sinned, and we have to recognize the fact that we sinned when we were before Hashem. And that's the idea of vidui, is that we're trying to get ourselves to understand the reality. The reality is only that Hashem is there watching us, that Hashem is there...